And good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, September 30th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Project downtown and Pullman completion delayed. Nez Perce tribe vote does not get two-thirds supermajority needed to eliminate blood quantum requirement for tribal enrollment. Avista has first ever intentional power shutoff due to fire danger. And National Democratic Party sending money to Democratic candidates in Idaho. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. There was a 2.7 magnitude earthquake Monday morning at MacArthur Lake, about halfway between Sandpoint and Bonner's Ferry. The quake occurred at 8:15 a.m., according to the U.S. Geological Survey's Did You Feel It function on its website. 11 people near MacArthur Lake reported feeling light intensity or weak shaking. People in Sandpoint, Post Falls, and Deer Park also reported feeling the quake. The Democratic National Committee recently sent $2.5 million to local Democratic parties and candidates in 30 states, most of which are not considered swing states in the presidential election, but where the party feels a need to shore up candidates. Idaho Democratic Party Chair Lauren Necochea, who is Idaho House Minority Leader, told the Idaho Capital Sun the DNC sent more than $70,000 to Idaho to fund two field workers to reach out to Hispanic voters in two rural counties and tribal members on the Nez Perce Reservation. Necochea told the news outlet the funding is significant in a heavily Republican state. She said, "We're just gratified to see that this investment hit all 57 states and territories for the first time so that no state is left behind. We're a traditionally red state, and that means we need the funding to fight back. This level of investment is also meaningful when it comes to winning races and getting out the vote." Necochea noted in 2022, one legislative race in Idaho was decided by 37 votes. She said the money will help fund legislative candidates in Idaho's four swing legislative districts, which could impact whether the far right in the increasingly divided Idaho Republican Party have control over most of the legislature, or whether those associated with the more moderate faction of the Republican Party have control. Minority Democrats in the Idaho legislature sometimes partner with more moderate Republicans on legislation needed to fund education and health care programs. That includes maintaining Idaho's Medicaid expansion. Necochea said it is essential for state government to continue operating that we have a critical mass of Democrats in the Idaho legislature. Idaho's four swing legislative districts includes District 6, which covers all of Latah and Lewis counties, plus part of rural Nez Perce County. The district covers part of the Nez Perce Reservation. Far-right legislators, Senator Dan Forman and Republican Brandon Mitchell, are facing challenges from Democrats Julia Parker and Kathy Dawes in District 6. Nez Perce tribal members Saturday did not reach a two-thirds supermajority needed to change the tribe's constitution to eliminate the blood quantum requirement for tribal enrollment. The vote was 434 in favor and 423 against. The Nez Perce tribe's constitution requires someone to be at least one-quarter Nez Perce to be enrolled as a tribal member. Those who supported the constitutional change say the tribe must consider cultural and familial connections to the tribe when determining enrollment status. Some of those who opposed the change in blood quantum rules were concerned bringing new members into the tribe may impact tribal services as well as hunting and fishing rights. Others said they believed the system should change but want the change done differently. According to the Lewiston Tribune, tribal member and Yakima lawyer Derek Red Arrow said there are people in the tribe who do not meet the blood quantum requirement, but are giving back, are going to ceremonies, speaking the language, going to powwows, and helping out elders. Red Arrow said, "We have people out there doing that who are part of the community, who are truly Indian in every sense of the word, but don't meet the blood quantum requirement." Red Arrow, who specializes in federal Indian law and treaty rights, said the threshold of the blood quantum was created by a cookie-cutter method of changing tribe constitutions around the nation. The federal government pressured tribes nationwide to adopt the blood quantum through the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934. Government-recognized tribe enrollments go back to the Dawes Act of 1887, which was set up to break up reservations by giving land held in common to individual members. The act also facilitates assimilation of tribal people into the culture of white settlers. At the time, tribal members had to enter their names on Dawes rolls to receive land stipends of 40 to 160 acres. The government's intent was to turn tribal people into farmers. Most Native Americans had little desire to be farmers. Some of the parcels were of poor quality, while the highest quality lands were given to white settlers. Many tribal members either sold off their property or otherwise lost the land. Former Nez Perce Tribal Executive Committee member Chantel Green said the blood quantum is a creation of the federal government which attaches a shelf life to tribes. Green said the government placed tribes with the blood quantum fractionated system that at the end of the day was meant to separate, divide, destroy, and take, and it's done its job, unfortunately. Green and Red Arrow worked with the general counsel in the spring to have the vote on changing the tribal constitution. Green said, "We have the ability to affect change, and that is through voting, through self-determination, to exercise our own rights and how we want our community to be and how we take care of our community. So there is 2% that can be identified as 4/4. Down to the numbers, there are only like 70 left, and the youngest is like 35. So being able to continue with our bloodline with this fractionated system was not ever going to happen, and that was the intent. The Nez Perce tribe has had special elections on changing blood quantum rules in the past. General Counsel Chair Jenny Oatman told the Lewiston Tribune those votes failed as well. Oatman said the Nez Perce Tribal Executive Committee will continue to address the issue. The completion date for Project Downtown in Pullman has been pushed back to November 22nd. The six-month-long construction project, which has closed much of Main Street to vehicular traffic and caused a sharp decline in business for downtown establishments, was originally scheduled for completion in October. Mayor Francis Benjamin told the Daily News the city's contract with Apollo Construction required Main Street to be open to at least one lane of vehicular traffic by Tuesday, October 15th. The new reopening date for traffic is Friday, November 1st, and the new date for full completion of the project is Friday, November 22nd, which is 2 days later than the previously agreed upon final date. Benjamin said on Friday the city's design consultant for the project, Welch Comer of Coeur d'Alene, informed city staff about the new completion dates. He said Apollo Construction could face fines because of the delays, but the city council has approved the new timeline and may adjust the contract with Apollo at their next meeting. The project is also over budget. Before the project began, city officials had predicted Project Downtown would cost $9.4 million, and the city had $9.5 million of American Rescue Plan Act money for it. After the city received no bids from construction firms to build the project in the fall of 2023, they put the project out on bids again, and Apollo placed a bid for $8.7 million, which the city accepted. The design contract with Welch Comer brought the total cost of the project to $11.7 million. Whitman County Commissioners have allocated $200,000 to help the city pay for the project. Mayor Benjamin said the rest of the money to pay for the project will come from local tax dollars in the city's water and utilities funds. At last week's city council meeting, Michelle's Closet owner, Michelle Kelly, said downtown business owners are frustrated because of the decrease in sales due to the construction downtown. She says the decrease in sales was worse than expected.
We are down 70% in sales for all years previous, and we're actually doing even worse than COVID. And I also talked to six other businesses to include Cure & Co., Monarch, Terracotta, Plus Country Candy, and a couple others, and they range from being down from 40% in sales to 80%. I'm not able to say the names of these businesses, but we do have a separate group chat for companies in downtown Pullman, and there are six that don't know if they're going to make it through the next 2 months on the other side of this construction.
Palouse Country Candy owner Pam DeBolt said business was off 25% as construction began, but later in the project, business was down 50% from previous years. Mayor Benjamin said the delays are because crews have found more contaminated soil and utility pipes that need repair than anticipated. Workers had not touched some of the underground utilities for a century. He also said gas stations, car repair shops, and fertilizer stores located in downtown over the past century have contaminated soil that needed to be cleaned up. Avista conducted its first ever intentional fire safety power shutoff yesterday, affecting about 1,500 customers in the Indian Trail neighborhood of Spokane due to the danger of fire starts. It was the first fire safety power shutoff by Avista since the utility started a new policy for shutting off power during fire danger last year. The shutoff came as the National Weather Service was warning of a dust storm traveling west to east through eastern Washington on a route south of Spokane and north of Colfax. Winds were gusting up to 50 miles per hour yesterday afternoon, and there was low humidity. The Weather Service also had red flag warnings in effect east of Wenatchee into northern Idaho yesterday. Avista said another 1,600 power customers lost service in the Spokane area yesterday due to high winds. Avista Electrical Engineering Director Vern Malensky told the Spokesman Review the intentional power shutoffs will mitigate dangers from sparks in the riskiest areas. Malensky said, "We have advanced modeling technology that allows us to understand where safety concerns and risks are in the system. It allows us to be very surgical in how we apply this public safety power shutoff tool." The modeling takes into account wind speed and direction, temperature, field conditions, humidity, and other metrics. Yesterday's shutoff came after the modeling indicated one out of Avista's 350 circuits were at critical risk. The dust storm prompted the National Weather Service to issue warnings to drivers that visibility could be reduced to near zero. National Weather Service meteorologist Daniel Butler said the worst visibility was on U.S. Highway 195 between Colfax and Spangle and on Interstate 90 between Ritzville and Sprague. Butler said, with all the crops in eastern Washington on some of the recently worked fields, it doesn't take a ton of wind to pick up a ton of dust.
Washington State has launched a new website that lets people and organizations know about ways they can fund going green. With resources for clean energy and efficiency projects at an all-time high, the state has created the portal FundHubWA to help navigate funding opportunities. That includes tax incentives, rebates, and state and federal grants. Amy Willis is with the Washington State Department of Commerce, which is running the site. She says Hub is an apt name for it and walks through how it works.
You say, I'm an individual, or I'm a farmer, or I'm a business, and I'm looking for funding opportunities for energy efficiency or for electric vehicles. And then it will present a variety of federal and state opportunities that are available.
FundHubWA offers resources from federal laws passed in recent years, including the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, CHIPS for America, the Inflation Reduction Act, and Washington State's Climate Commitment Act. The website is available for individuals and a wide range of organizations, including public agencies, tribal governments, and nonprofits. K Carol Albert is the senior advisor for federal funding in Governor Jay Inslee's office. She says these funding sources are important for combating climate change.
There has never been a better time to get projects going in communities that are contributing to cleaner and healthier and more prosperous areas of Washington to really move away from fossil fuels.
Albert says FundHub WA could prove especially useful for local governments and rural communities. People in these areas often do more than one job, which can make it overwhelming to track all the available opportunities.
There are just not enough hours in the day. So the portal is a way for them to get to this information quickly and then assess if they or their communities would qualify for it.
The website is supported with funding from the Climate Commitment Act, which could be repealed in November if Initiative 2117 passes. Albert says regardless of the outcome of the election, the future of FundHub WA will be up to state lawmakers. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Programming on KRFP is brought to you in part by One World Cafe, specializing in craft coffee, fresh baked pastries, artisan sandwiches, weekend brunch, wine, beer, and cider on tap. One World Cafe has a web calendar for upcoming live events and a campus location in the Janssen Engineering Building.
KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including peace and human rights.
U.S. mail carriers will rally across the country on Tuesday to bring attention to their working conditions. An Idaho postal worker helped start the event. Sherry Butler with the United States Postal Service is a member of her local postal workers union based in Spokane. She lives and works in Coeur d'Alene. She spoke out about understaffing at a USPS Board of Governors meeting last year. Then the board limited public comments at its hearings to once a year. Then she started a letter writing campaign, which has since turned into two rallies.
It just kind of grew as more people became interested. The small idea of a letter writing campaign turned into a larger movement called We Won't Be Silenced. With this movement, we are ending the silence and sharing why our stories need to be told.
Members of the American Postal Workers Union National Convention in July then passed her resolution for a rally. Rallies are scheduled across Idaho, including in Boise, Caldwell, and Idaho Falls. Workers will call for more public comment opportunities at Board of Governors meetings, better staffing and services, and more cooperation from management at the bargaining table. Workers are also frustrated with Postmaster General Louis DeJoy's consolidation and reform plan for the post office, called Delivering for America, which is likely to slow mail delivery in many rural parts of the country. Butler notes that DeJoy has delayed the implementation of parts of his 10-year plan.
He began to change his course once people started speaking up. Constituents are reaching out to their senators, and the senators are responding. We need the public to keep voicing their concerns loudly and pressuring USPS management to act in the best interest of the people.
Organizers have planned more than 120 rallies nationwide for Tuesday. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Tomorrow is the deadline for Montana residents who qualify to apply for a property tax rebate. The state legislature passed the measure during its last session. Jason Sleed with the Montana Department of Revenue says people can qualify for as much as $675 in property tax rebates if they lived in the state for at least 7 months in 2023 and owned a residence for that long.
Single-family homes and apartments and condominiums, trailers, manufactured homes, mobile homes, and that's also including up to 1 acre of surrounding land.
That amounts to about 215,000 Montana homes and 3,200 small businesses. Critics have said the temporary rebate program isn't enough to offset the effects of a recent property tax increase, among the biggest in Montana's history. Even though the deadline to file is not until October 1st, the state has already issued more than $130 million in property tax rebates this year, which Sleed says boosts local economies.
Last year in 2023, we sent out a total of about $142 million. That money's going right back into your local governments, and people are happy to get that money and do the things they want to do with that.
In addition to applying online, Sleed says Montana residents can also get help by visiting one of the Revenue Department's field offices around the state, which could be especially helpful for folks in rural areas. This is Mark Moran for Big Sky Connection.
Oregon Health and Science University and Legacy Health have officially submitted merger plans to state regulators. Behavioral therapists at Legacy unionized in anticipation of this to protect themselves. 60 behavioral health therapists at Legacy Unity Center for Behavioral Health have voted to join the Oregon Nurses Association. They're also doubling the size of an existing bargaining unit at the hospital, which includes other mental health workers. Behavioral health therapist Megan Wilkinson-Smith says she and her coworkers didn't know about a potential merger until they heard it on the news.
It worried people that we were going to continue to have no information and just be kind of blindsided by whatever decisions and changes Legacy decided to move forward with.
Wilkinson-Smith says with the union, they hope to have a more standardized pay structure. ONA and other unions representing workers affected by the merger say they support it based on assurances from OHSU, including on job security, pay parity, and honoring union contracts. Access to mental health has been an issue in Oregon. A Mental Health America ranking from 2022 placed the state third to last. Wilkinson-Smith says the union will help her and her colleagues better advocate for patients.
We hope that we'll have more of a voice in expressing the things that we think could be helping our patients before they get to a point of needing hospitalization, but also afterwards and what that looks like for them.
Wilkinson-Smith also says the union will give them more of a voice in Salem when it comes to state policies. Along with mental and behavioral health specialists, ONA represents more than 220 nurses at Legacy Union Center for Behavioral Health. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
Visitor spending in and near national parks contributed to the U.S. economy at a record high level last year. Grand Teton is one park looking at how to manage increasing visitation. Lodging, meals, and other 2023 visitor spending in communities near national parks contributed over $55 billion to the U.S. economy and supported over 400,000 jobs, according to the National Park Service. Grand Teton National Park ranks fifth for visitor spending at nearly $750 million. The park says visitor numbers are increasing and that trend is expected to continue. Jennifer Newton with the park says they've been collecting public comments this summer.
We're really at a phase and a point where we're interested in getting public feedback on what our desired conditions are in the park and what we should be managing for.
After some fluctuations during the pandemic, Newton says visitation rates in 2023 were similar to 2019, though how and when those visitors used the park did shift. According to a July report, 43% agreed that Grand Teton National Park was too crowded. The visitor spending report also tallies the labor income, value added, and economic output based on each national park and each state. Wyoming ranks high in several of these categories. Newton says that information is helpful at the local, regional, and federal levels.
And that's really helpful whenever you think about things too. Like for every dollar that Congress invests in national parks, there is a greater than $10 return on that investment.
In the 2025 federal budget, the Biden administration requested $3.6 billion for the National Park Service, an increase of over $250 million from the 2024 budget. I'm Kathleen Shannon reporting for Wyoming News Service.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. In the weather, mostly clear tonight and tomorrow, low 38, high 72 tomorrow, partly cloudy, low 44 Tuesday night, and mostly clear Wednesday through Thursday, highs 62 Wednesday, 65 Thursday with areas of frost before 8 a.m., low 35 Wednesday night. Currently 55 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ, there's a PayPal option, and there's a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robardis. Flashpoints is coming up next, and at 7:30, music begins with Bex doing Spotlight. Also, Chia Pets in to play music for you in the 9 to 11 slot tonight. And we've got Stephanie on to play music for you 11 o'clock to midnight tonight here on KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored in part by C.F. Morrison Guitars at 130 North Grand Avenue in Pullman, providing lessons, repairs, and handmade acoustic and classical guitars. Open Wednesday and Saturday afternoons. Details at cfmorrisonguitars.com. ARFP thanks its donors and sponsors.